You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, June 6, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, from the Progressive in Wisconsin, Ruth Conniff. We go over the whys and hows of the failure to recall Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin, the success in, I guess, limited success in flipping the Wisconsin State Senate to Democratic control. It'll be a short program today. I've got to get on a train to go up to Netroots Nation in Providence, Rhode Island. Also on the program, public display of a small amount of marijuana. Maybe a thing of the past. Governor Cuomo comes out, calls for decriminalize. The Republicans in Congress still up to virtually nothing, short of fighting the scourge of the banning of incandescent light bulbs. Not joking. Let's jump right into this. Obviously, last night was depressing. Not fun. I guess this is 2 years ago now. I got booked to do some Aspen Ideas Festival. Janine and I, Janine Garofalo and I, went out to do a really ill-conceived semi-comedy show where our guests were, I can't remember who there was a reporter for the New York Times, for the life of me, I can't remember. But the other guy was Grover Norquist. And we were in a small venue. This is not broadcast in any way. Nobody was recording it in any way. And I was concerned that Janine would lunge across and tear Grover Norquist to shreds. She was actually not as we were having fun with it. But Grover was, I'd never met the guy, and obviously I don't like his politics, and as a person I don't really care. But I assumed we were going to just have fun with this, and people would obviously be who they were. They would espouse their political beliefs, but, it was supposed to be a comedy show. And so we were going back and forth, and Grover Norquist kept repeating over and over again something that at that point I had heard very little from the right wing, but it was a demonization of public union workers, of public workers. I mean, a constant drumbeat. At one point I said to him, I said, in the course of the show, I said, you realize we're not on cable television now. I'm asking you a question that has nothing to do with what you're talking about, but he just kept repeating this mantra over and over again. Why should public unions, why should people who work for the government receive a pension? Why should they receive fair wages? It's unfair. And this was the beginning, at least, and I don't think I just started paying attention to it more. I mean, we started to hear this over and over again. The demonization of people who work for the government. And not, we're not talking about bureaucrats. We're talking about people who pick up the garbage. We're talking about people who fill the potholes. We're talking about people who teach our children. And they were quite successful, I think, over the past 2 or 3 years, maybe it was 3 years ago, in this attempt to demonize people who essentially, and it's not that these people are getting anything for nothing. They're trading their labor for compensation, just like any of us do in the private sector. But they've been quite successful, and I think that was the strategy. We know the strategy that Scott Walker had, and that was to divide and conquer. And in many respects, that battle was won by Scott Walker and his ilk when they passed that bill to curtail the rights of union public workers, public union workers. And so there are many factors as to why Walker won. It would have been a stunning defeat of Walker had it happened. And we'll talk to Ruth Conniff about those things. But the fight continues. Scott Walker may not be able to do any more damage in Wisconsin, but we're going to see this fight play out over and over again. And it raises that question that I've been talking about over the past year. Whether or not the channeling, and there are strategic and tactical problems with this recall that have happened throughout. There's issues with Tom Barrett as a candidate. But at the end of the day, the real question is, where does our power lie? We see the millions of dollars, and it really was more of a quirk of the Wisconsin election laws than it was anything else. But Tom Barrett was woefully outspent. And there are issues as to whether or not National Democrats should have poured more resources into it, whether President Obama should have come to Wisconsin. But at the end of the day, the real question is, where does our power lie? And it raises that question as to whether or not that energy should have been channeled into electoral politics versus organizing and protest and a general strike. And I ask this question, and I pose this question, and we'll be talking about this question in the coming weeks and months and perhaps years. Not so much as Monday morning quarterbacking or Wednesday morning quarterbacking, but for the future. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Ruth Conniff from The Progressive in Wisconsin. Not a terribly happy day, ladies and gentlemen, but the tremendous amount, we should all be inspired by the tremendous amount of work and the activism and the perseverance and the organizing that progressives did in Wisconsin. We cannot allow those efforts to be forgotten. It's something to build upon. And we're going to examine this, but the real point is that there is people power out there. And it may have taken robocalls. It may have taken a series of lies of Scott Walker as to his work in office. And it may have taken 10 times more money for him to win, but he did win. But this does not mean that there isn't an absence of genuine power amongst people, and we should not forget that. We'll take a break. We'll be back in a minute. We are back on the Majority Report. Sam Seder on the phone. Ruth Conniff, political editor at the Progressive Magazine, based out of, you're out of Madison, is that right?
Yes, we are.
So, thanks for joining us, Ruth. I know you were probably up late last night, and today is not exactly the most joyous of occasions to be to be talking. But give us a sense, I mean, just walk us through what happened. I mean, I know there were obviously a lot of forces that were fighting against the this recall. And just to outline for us what you perceive the most important ones were that led to Walker's, I guess, re-election.
Clearly the most powerful force was all the money that came into this election, because it's unprecedented in history. We had, you know, Walker raised $30 million, which put him in the same class as the second-tier Republican presidential candidates. For a statewide election, it was completely unheard of. And 70% of that money came from outside of our state. So he went to Foster Freeze, he went to Sheldon Adelson, the same people who were propping up Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum gave money to Scott Walker. And, of course, Americans for Prosperity, the group founded by David Koch, the Koch brothers, really became famous in Wisconsin because of their support for Walker and sort of the exposure of their national right-wing agenda because of what they were doing here. Americans for Prosperity put $3 million into their effort to get out their vote in the last couple of weeks here. They ran a bus tour of 10 cities in Wisconsin. They brought people in from Illinois to canvass and hold rallies. And they really, you know, they used their money very effectively, both to run constant wall-to-wall advertising on television and radio here, bashing Tom Barrett, connecting him to crime in Milwaukee, which is a racially coded thing to talk about here in Wisconsin, connecting him to the death of a baby who was beaten to death in Milwaukee by an angry boyfriend. You know, just really, it was an ugly campaign, and it was a very heavily financed campaign, and most of all, it was a national right-wing campaign on the Walker side. You know, Reince Priebus, who's from Wisconsin, you know, the head of the Republican Party, said that this was it. This was their, you know, most important race, and they really meant it. And on the other side, you know, we had the state Democrats. We had this grassroots movement, which turned out these historic rallies in Wisconsin. But we did not have the DNC or President Obama or sort of the national force behind the Barrett campaign.
And his ability to raise all that money was really a function of the Wisconsin recall law, which allowed him to start raising money the day those signatures were filed, as opposed to Barrett, who had to wait until he was the candidate, which didn't happen until late March.
And not only that, there were no limits on the money that Walker could raise. So while Barrett could not collect more than $10,000 from a single individual contributor, Walker had no limit whatsoever. There was a single contributor here in Wisconsin who gave him $500,000. He raised millions of dollars. He raised three-quarters of his money from individual donors outside of our state, these same billionaires we're talking about earlier. So that was huge. But that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about whether the recall law in Wisconsin is a bad idea. And in fact, exit polls showed that voters only favored the idea of recall by about 27%.
Right.
So people thought the recall itself was questionable. And I want to clarify one thing about that, which is that the recall in Wisconsin was a progressive era reform, along with all of our other great progressive ideas that came out of the state. It's, you know, it's a pro-democracy idea. If you can gather enough signatures to represent 25% of the electorate in the last election, you can recall a politician for any reason. It doesn't have to be for committing crimes. But in the 1980s, they added the loophole for fundraising to that. And that, I think, is the sort of thing we should think about reforming.
Right. And there were other issues, too. I mean, to a certain extent, you know, do you feel that Barrett really carried the fight that initiated the recall? In other words, I mean, you have this collective bargaining dispute that happened almost a year and a half ago.
Right.
Do you think that he carried that banner? I mean, do you think that there was enough to really sort of because it seemed to me that Barrett was campaigning on a couple of different issues that watered down that big message of the importance of maintaining the wage structure for union workers and thus everybody else. There was so much of this. We need to bring Wisconsin together, and we need to reach out, and we need to compromise. And that to me seems to be fighting on the wrong turf.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a little cringe-inducing when he kept talking about ending the Civil War, because once a Civil War is underway, you want to win the war. You don't want to just pull back. But I mean,
and in fact, the Civil War is not ended. I mean,
that
wasn't going to end in any case. I mean, in some ways, he's basically saying we're going to. I want you to elect me so that we can basically just resolve that we're not going to do anything about why you started this recall in the first place.
Well, I mean, he did offer to restore collective bargaining rights, and certainly, you know, there were a barrage of things that happened here in Wisconsin that were so shocking to watch, like the biggest cut in history to our top-tier public school system. I mean, people are looking at school closings. They're looking at just a brutal attack on teachers. But most of all, I think what your question gets at is the divide-and-conquer strategy that Walker is now famous for laying out in that video where he talks to his big donor. He did that really effectively in Wisconsin, and this has very big national implications. And in fact, what he did is he said to an insecure workforce, people who are on hard times and they don't have a lot of job security and they're seeing their benefits shrink and they're paying a lot of money for that, he said to them, you know, look at these fat cat teachers. Look at these public employees. Look at, in essence, people who are in unions. Look how they have job security and good benefits. And he stirred up a resentment of people who have what really the whole middle class ought to have. And it's very effective because labor union membership has declined so precipitously in this whole country. So people looked around and they said, yeah, why should public employees be able to retire? Why should they have this great pension that's fully funded? Why should they have health care that they don't have to pay for? So that is the really distressing thing, I think, about the whole Americans for Prosperity tactic. The policies that Walker enacted here are the same policies they want to enact nationally, which is huge tax breaks for corporations. And they're not offering job security or good benefits to workers, but they are getting workers on board with that program by stirring up this resentment among union and non-union folks. And combating that and restoring some kind of sense of solidarity is the big long-term task here.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost redirecting the resentment. I mean, the resentment is a function of people losing health care, people having less services, having less security in their retirement, having the lack of a pension and whatnot, and it is really the refocusing of that resentment, scapegoating those who are the last vestiges of people who have that. From your perspective, what, and maybe you don't have a sense of this, but for the sake of this argument, which we're going to be having, it's probably going to be one, a battle that's going to be ended up waged state by state across the country, if not also nationally. What is the best way to redirect that resentment towards the forces that are actually functioning for it? In other words, they want to make this a race to the bottom. And so we're going to bring down those members of a union who actually get pensions to the level where the rest of us who don't get pensions. How do you fight that?
Well, I mean, I think that there is some hope to be taken from what happened in Wisconsin, because there are, you know, the left has been talking for a long time about corporate influence and about how nefarious this right-wing program is. And in Wisconsin, people actually figured out, and I think this happened not just here in our state but nationally, who the Koch brothers are. You know, what ALEC is, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which actually drafted most of these laws that Walker shoved down our throats in Wisconsin. The fact that this is a national strategy to try to basically liquidate the public sphere in order to enrich corporations. What's discouraging is that Walker won by saying things like he's got the economy moving in the right direction and using this term job creators that they use instead of the very rich and saying, you know, we're creating jobs. Well, of course, as you know, Wisconsin lost more jobs than any other state in America on Walker's watch. Every month, the Bureau of Labor Statistics would put out a new report. He rushed some numbers out that somewhat contradicted that, although they're still lousy numbers. They're half the recovery that the rest of the nation is experiencing. And based on muddying the waters, he made this argument that connected with people emotionally, that, you know, helping the job creators and caring about prosperity and sticking it to the fat cat school teachers is the way to, you know, to a booming economy. And I think this has been so completely disproven by the facts. We just have to figure out how is it that you get that message across to people. And I think, you know, it's going to get across because it is not working in Wisconsin. Walker, he produced all these campaign signs that said it's working, and then they recalled those signs because it just seemed too flagrantly false. And I think that that's, you know, the facts are for people that this stuff is not working.
Let me ask you this. I mean, they're obviously people were aware of all these sort of structural impediments to a recall before this. The notion that he was going to have unlimited campaign finance, and it was not necessarily possible to predict that Barrett would be so outspent, but structurally people were aware of that dynamic, that it could happen in that way. You're also talking about having the recall over the summer. I saw a stat somewhere here that that had you had the same numbers of young people who came out for Obama in 2008 come out in this election, Barrett would have won by 50,000 votes. But, of course, it's the summertime. A lot of those students who are otherwise registered in Wisconsin to vote aren't there.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big impediment. There was an amazing get-out-the-vote drive. And, you know, we did see basically, especially in Milwaukee, where a lot of African-American voters stayed home in 2010, we saw polling places that were running out of same-day voter registration forms, running out of ballots, and we saw turnout that, while it didn't reach 2008 levels, it did increase about 50,000 votes in Milwaukee over where it was in 2010. So it was sort of halfway in between 2008 and 2010 in terms of turnout. Dane County had 80% turnout. That's the Madison area.
Well, here's that stat. Here's that stat. Only 16% of the electorate was this is from Marcus Melitzis at Daily Coast. Only 16% of the electorate was 18 to 29, compared to 22% in 2008. That's the difference between 646,000 votes and 400,000 young voters, or about 246. Walker won by 172,000. But all right,
and let me say, like, that was a very deliberate strategy, because the Walker lawyers fought the recall petitions in the first couple of weeks after they were filed, and then they dropped all their objections and they stopped their delaying tactics. And this was a very deliberate strategy. It pushed the election back just enough to get it beyond the end of the school year. And the other thing that they did was they imposed this 28-day residency requirement on voters. So if you have not lived at your current address for 28 days, you cannot vote. Well, the school year ended,
right,
and students left their dorms. So there was a drive to try to get folks to vote absentee, to vote earlier, to, you know, make sure that they had a permanent address, like their parents' address. But once school ended, people left town, and on top of it, you know, if they just moved into an apartment, they were stricken from the rolls. It did, in fact, prove quite a barrier,
right,
and that
so,
was not an accident.
So let me ask you this. So with all that in mind, and, you know, obviously there was no one central person who was saying this is what we're going to do, and, you know, and having all these data points at their hands. When there was a time I was out in Madison, I think it was in that last day of the massive protests, when the farmers came in with their tractors and they were talking about badger care, and they were talking about, and you had the firefighters and the police show up in Madison, which was huge because they, of course, were left out of this bill to destroy the capacity for unions to collectively bargain. Do you think that there was, or give me your sense of the idea of channeling this energy into electoral politics as opposed to broader strikes, protests, activism?
Well, you're exactly right to ask this question. I mean, this was a debate early on. There were folks who really wanted to have a general strike, and there was a coalition of labor unions in this area that took a vote. I mean, it just, the fact is, it wasn't so controllable, this energy, right? It's not a strategy. This was not, you know, the Democratic Party taking control of things here, or even the heads of the labor unions. There was this just sort of massive outpouring of citizen energy, which was amazing to see. And, you know, there were votes on taking a general strike at labor unions. There was a little bit of fear about that, because that can be a very tough thing for people to do. We passed that moment, and then the energy got siphoned into this recall drive, and there were tons of signs saying recall Walker. The State Democratic Party and the National Democratic Party were leery of the recall from the beginning for exactly this reason, that it's hard to control. You cannot set the date. They could not make it line up with the presidential election. Once the petitions are filed, there is an automatic process that goes into effect, so it can't really be controlled. And I think in the end, people felt so strongly that they wanted to see something come out of this, and that when we made the transition from the grassroots kind of spontaneous outpouring to the recall drive, there was a real dissipation of energy. I think, you know, the campaign phase did not tap into that same energy that of the petition drive and the mass protests before it. And that's always true because, of course, you know, grassroots movements and electoral politics are not the same thing. And, you know, the civil rights movement was not led by Lyndon Johnson, right? But it was the forcing of the politicians to move in that direction that really accomplished a lot. And here it was a tiny compressed cycle, and the two just didn't match up that well.
Do you think that, I mean, give me a sense. I mean, obviously, you know, we're 12 hours out from this thing, so there's really no way of getting a sense of what happens now. And I know that at the very least, the Senate has flipped. Is that right in Wisconsin?
Yes. And yep, John Lehman won in Racine, where there was historic turnout, a lot of black turnout that we didn't see in the last election. It's a working class, blue-collar area. He beat Senator Van Wengard, who is closely tied to Walker, and that is going to mean that the Democrats control our state Senate and that they will be able to resist things like right to work, which everybody fears is coming down the pike now.
Now, of course, the Senate's probably going to be still out of session until November, but theoretically, it certainly helps, obviously, to be an incumbent, I guess, going into the November elections.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there was going to be a special session. Had the Republicans retained control of the Senate, Walker was going to call a special session. And, you know, the plans for Wisconsin are really dire. I mean, there is a lot of stuff cooking that was slowed down, actually, in the summer round of recall elections when three Democrats won and reduced the majority of in the Senate of the Republicans to a single vote, and moderate Republicans started standing up to some of the worst elements of the Walker agenda. So that's why we don't have a completely statewide charter school district that was going to siphon public school funds into online classes, causing schools to close and kids to have to sit in front of a computer instead of going to school. It's why we don't have vouchers for special ed kids. It's why we don't have a mining bill that did away with our public meetings process and fast-tracked our environmental regulatory system here. So, you know, some of that stuff had already been stopped because we had only one Republican vote. We have some moderate Republicans in our legislature. And now with the Democratic majority, I think it will be a lot more effective in stopping the Walker agenda.
So give me a sense of what do you anticipate? And obviously, again, we're 12 hours out from this thing, so it's hard to say. And but, I mean, do you think that there is a chance that there will be another round of this type of grassroots activism, or do you think that people are exhausted, or is this not something we're going to be able to know for another 6 months?
Well, I mean, today people are pretty down,
right?
You know, and last night it was pretty stark to see that rally around the Capitol go from euphoric and really reminiscent of those great rallies a year and a half ago to kind of despondent. And, you know, people are feeling low because this was a big fight that we lost. And also the right is very triumphant. Walker is stronger than ever now. He's a national star of the right. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, our perspective here in Wisconsin is this is where we live, you know, and we cannot give up this fight. This is not theory for us. And I think there was a sense of community created by this movement that came together that is going to serve us well. I mean, I think there's no doubt that this grassroots movement is going to keep on pushing. And, you know, we're all on the same page. We all know what we're talking about. We have this overarching sense that, you know, what's at stake here is our whole society and the idea of having a middle class, the idea of rather than giving tax breaks to corporations, we're going to have a good public school system. We're going to, you know, have kind of the basics of a solid society with a good life for people. And I don't think that's going to go away.
Well, Ruth, I just, you know, want to tell you that, you know, sitting here in New York and just have tremendous admiration for everything that you and your fellow Wisconsinites did to fight this. And we wish you the best and hope to talk to you again soon.
Well, thanks so much. It's great to talk to you.
Bye, Ruth. All right, folks.
Okay.
Like I say, shortened show today because I'm headed to Netroots Nation, and I intend to interview just a whole mess of people. So over the next 2 days, we'll be live there. I'll also be doing pre-recorded interviews, which we will hear over the next week. But I anticipate tomorrow's program and Friday's program to be jam-packed with people. Or maybe I'll just be sitting alone in my booth. I'm not quite sure. I'm going to head into the better half of the program. You can call us at 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. You can IM me at Majority FM. You can become a member of Majority Report at majority.fm. You know the whole spiel. I'll plug all this stuff tomorrow more. I promise. Just not in the mood right now. In the better half of the program, I'll just talk about a couple of things. The number of union households that voted for Walker. Dig in a little bit into the statistics. A couple other stories. See you tomorrow at Netroots. Or for those of you who are smart enough to support independent media that you want to hear on a daily basis, in the better half of the program.